Okay, very first thing. My mom, my sister, I haven't spoken to them. I haven't seen them. I haven't written them. It's been really helpful for me. Anytime I get tempted to write someone, which is not the practice that I'm doing right now, I think, man, you know, I'm not, in, you know, at the end of 3 years, I'm not going to tell my mom I wrote someone other than her. So, so very first thing, I love you guys, Mom, Aaliyah, my sister, and one of the deep, beautiful things, you know, that I've learned in retreat is how incredibly grateful I am for you and all the love and support that you give me, and I can't wait to see you, and I miss you so much, and I'll see you very, very soon. Okay, so now I'm allowed to talk to you guys. firstly, we were, you know, it was recommended we don't get carried away with the thanks, but you know, you can't help yourself. That, in particularly, you know, the caretakers, the sponsors, everyone who put us here, who keeps us here, the beauty of the life that you have made, that you maintain for me, for us, is unbelievable. It's a lot to live up to, and I don't know to what extent I'm successful at that, but you've made it way too embarrassing not to try my damnedest to try to become the person I think you want me to be. And I sure hope you'll be happy with me when we get out. Holy Lama Geshe Michael, you support us so beautifully here. I think we all feel this amazing blessing of having so much of your presence here. On a personal level, you saved my life, by which I mean I wasn't happy, and now I am, among other things. Lama Christy, for having the far-reaching vision to see us all into retreat, and not only to believe, but to demand that I believe that even I could find myself in a 3-year retreat, and so I am. And then my fellow retreatants, who knows where I'm waving? what you do is hard, and I know, and but the way that you support each other and the way that you support me is amazing and beautiful, and the harmony is incredible, and we all love each other very much, and also I think we're a little like afraid to damage our meditation practice with any strife, which sounds a little neurotic and probably is, but makes for a really beautiful community. And Kendra, my teacher, my lama, my angel, my wife, you're it. I mean, you're the thing. You're the whole path. You fill my life with so much joy, and you know, what could anyone ask for? I love you, my wife. So okay, I want to elaborate on something that Geshe Michael said to us early in retreat, and I know he doesn't always love to be quoted, but I think he'll be all right with this. And I want to get this right, because it'll sort of be my root text for the talk. He said, nowadays I'm thinking that just being happy day to day is a fine service of others. It's difficult sometimes, but it is what others really want from us. this is cool. I mean, it can sort of get by you. It can seem simple, but it's been a really deep practice for me. And we've been taught so many sort of wild and exotic, esoteric, you know, practices. And it's hard sometimes to know what to pick, where to put your effort. And so this has been a big one for me. And so I want to talk about how it's gone and what I'm learning. So there's some tradition for speaking about the benefits of any practice you're going to discuss. And on one level, it's silly, right? We don't need to be talked into being happy, but then I don't know, maybe we do. So on one level, it just feels good, right? We like being happy. I mean, there's some sort of like lightness, this sort of weight that comes off us when we're happy, that just sort of allows us to do more, get more, give more, and our practices deepen in this amazing way. And I think this is really, it's a big key that I've learned. Like, I don't think you can get very good at meditation unless you're enjoying it. I'm speaking to myself, because I have a tendency to sort of subject myself to meditation rather than partake of my meditation. And it doesn't work that well. Cause if the mind wants to do something else, it will. And doesn't really, you know, need your butt to sort of get up off the cushion to go to the movies. They're all waiting right here. Whereas, you know, when we enjoy our practice, our meditation, our yoga, our service of others, this sort of new depth opens up in them, and then flowers. But most importantly, referring to the root text, he said, it's a fine service of others. So that's what I wanted to discuss in particular. And on an obvious level, you know, people just like being around happy people. And that's nice for them. You laugh and people laugh, and they may or may not get the joke, but it's infectious. And a lot of times people have this sort of, hidden happiness waiting just below the surface to come out, and just sort of waiting for you to give the green light for them to let go and be happy, be joyful themselves. And I especially wanted to say, for those of us who like aspire to like reach or teach or help people to be, you know, joyful or successful in their lives, people are gonna look at our lives and see if we're happy in our lives, and they'll judge us by that, and they should, right? I mean, they should judge us by that. We should judge ourselves by that. Is my, you know, methodology for happiness making me happy? And if it's not, maybe I ought not spread it. Whereas if it is working, if you do have a method for happiness, and we'll sort of talk about one, that's successful, and then people see this joy in you when they come and they ask you why you're so happy all the time. And you can tell them, you know, why, and you can help them. You can sort of give them that happiness. And then there's a deeper level, that I wanted to talk about. Don't stop me if you've heard this one. So what's this? Right. Yeah, it's a pen. Cool. If a dog came in the room, what would a dog see? Maybe something to chew on, a chew toy. And what is, you know, so what? So what does that prove? It proves that, pen is not in this object. If not everyone sees pen, then pen can't be here. Pen is coming from you. There's something in you that's forcing you to see pen. Your own goodness will define what you see here. You know, if you like this pen, then it's your goodness. I'm a fan of the G2, you know, gel pen. But people like felt tip pens, they like ballpoint pens, whatever. But, you know, it, the, the goodness in you will determine whether or not you're enjoying yourself. You're enjoying this pen. And then everything in our world is like that. I mean, there's not a piece or part or pixel of your world that isn't determined by your own goodness, by the way that you've made goodness in the world, by your service of others, by your kind thoughts. And pens, places, people, even. Right, so we all sort of, probably heard the angry boss shtick. So, quick version. He's the boss is yelling at me, so I think he's a schmuck because I don't like being yelled at. But the guy next to me thinks I'm a schmuck, so he thinks the boss is a great guy because he's yelling at me, I'm such a schmuck. Guy across the room, he doesn't really care one way or the other about me or the boss or the, schmuck next to me. So who is the boss really, right? And there ain't no really, there's some shapes and some colors and some decibels and your mind is wrapping them up in a sort of tidy package and calling them angry boss. So your mind makes this image called angry boss, it's not a thing eyes could ever see. Eyes see shapes. Eyes see colors. They don't see angry. That's mind stuff added on. They don't see boss. That's your story put on to the person in front of you. They don't even see person. Do you see his feelings? Do you see his mind? Do you see his pain? That's mind stuff added on. Ain't no person out there. Person isn't here. But we have to be careful, right? There's the classic mistake that we're not going to make of thinking, oh, well, then so you're saying I'm all alone in my mind and there's no one but me. I'm sort of swimming in a world of my mind and that's a bummer. I'm lonely. But on one level, it's just bad logic. If I say something is coming from something, then that thing exists, right? If you mention a cause for something, then that thing that's caused, it damn sure better exist. Stuff that don't exist don't get to have causes. There are pens, and that's why we can write with them. They're people, and that's why we can talk to them, serve them, love them, and be loved by them. And so why am I seeing an angry boss? Why is the boss that I see, an angry boss? Where's that coming from? Who's being forced to see angry in the boss? So let me ask you this. Can you make someone happy by throwing them a birthday party? And yes, yeah, you can. And maybe not like you might think. Like they may or may not be happy at the party, but you try and you want them to be happy and you make this effort to make them happy and that goodness changes you. That effort to make happiness, that striving to put happiness into the world changes your heart, your mind, and forces you to see happiness in the world, forces you to see joy in the world. And I think this is a very deep way to think about our service of others, about cultivating the joy, the happiness in our own hearts that forces us to see joy and happiness in the hearts of those around us and the hearts of those we love. But another level we have to talk about, of course, is okay, that's cool. You see them as happy. All right. You have the good seeds to see them as happy. That's great. But what do they see? I don't know. We can't see what they see. I can't see what they see yet. We're not yet in a position to base our actions on the way a person sees themselves in their own heart. But we have to go with what we see. We have no choice. For now, we have to be guided by that. as the joy in your heart deepens, the joy that you see in others, in their faces, on in their laughter, in their play, it deepens as well. And that joy is a projection of your own goodness. And they are no more than images thrown into the view of your senses by your own past goodness. And yet they have feelings and minds and hearts and needs and solidity even, right? Like no less real than the solidity of this mirror image of a pen. Right? Like you feel that, right? There's like a... And it's as real as that, and all coming from you. So, okay, but still, you know, questions on the table. I see them filled with joy. Is it possible that they still see themselves in pain? And I think I have to say yes. And the way that they see themselves depends on their own goodness. And right now, I'm not in a position to see the way they see themselves in their own heart, but then that day will come as well. You guide yourself to a pure world, led by the joy that you see in other beings, and the day comes when you peer beyond the veil of other people's minds. They say, right? Paracitta Jnanam, says Master Patanjali, third chapter, Yoga Sutras. You will know others' minds. And then on that day, like we serve people on this whole new level. We teach people on this amazing level by the individual needs of their individual hearts. And, you know, not just teach like, you know, sitting up in front of some people and trying to explain what you think, though you may do that too, but you appear in every and any facet of a person's life that can serve them. You'll stand on a billion worlds, the Lama says. You'll be their mother, their father, their brother, their sister, their children, their friend, a stranger on the bus, any form at all. You'll appear to the lonely hearted as a stray beam of light glinting off the tip of a wave to remind them that there's joy always around the corner. And so we follow this path to joy, led by the, you know, even limited vision we have today of this golden and glorious lamp that is the joy we see in other beings. And this is the path to an even deeper vision and even greater joy. So cool. Let's be happy. We're all convinced. But you know, Lama said it's difficult sometimes. So why? I was thinking about this, and I started out with circumstances, what I'm calling circumstances anyway. And circumstances, they range from sort of mild to extreme. Mild could be, you know, it's a little too hot to be happy for others today, or this isn't the restaurant I was hoping to go to, or I don't look good in this shirt, and it seems petty, but in the moment, these things can really seem to get us down when we're sort of in them. And I know you know that, you know, the fact that your hair just won't sit right today, or your, you know, Ecuadorian cacao nibs didn't come in the delivery box is, you know, and that's not really what's got you down, but the mind tries so hard to convince us in the moment that that's the thing. And this has really hit me hard in retreat, how much of my unhappiness is that, nothing today is all that different from yesterday. I did the same things yesterday and the day before that I'm going to do today, and yesterday I was happy and today I'm mad. And you know, the mind will come in and say, you know, did you notice it, you know, it happened around the time you dropped that Brussels sprout? And, you know, don't be fooled. It's not the Brussels sprout. There are deeper forces at play, and it's hard for us to see them right now. We're just upset and fussy. And I was tempted to call it, like, like causeless unhappiness, because that's how it feels in the moment. It's certainly not uncaused. It's just that I don't have the wisdom to see where this particular bad mood came from. I just feel fussy. And, you know, Kendra, bless her heart, she'll say, you know, is it me? Are you mad at me? And I'm not. It's not. I don't know what it is. I'm just mad. And it's actually kind of cool when this becomes a predominant unhappiness in your life, because it forces you to sort of like look at unhappiness itself and look for solutions beyond, you know, some sort of temporary circumstances that will then have to work in a variety of situations, because, you know, unhappiness can sort of strike anywhere. And we can beat this kind of unhappiness, and I think you know how, but we'll talk about it. But first, you know, we had right, mild circumstances and uncaused suffering, which isn't uncaused, and then there's extreme circumstances. Extreme circumstances could be like, you know, your partner broke up with you, or you know, a piano fell on your toe, or. And on some level, these are, they're not really any different, in that they're not really the cause for your unhappiness. You know, try telling that to me when I've got a piano on my toe, but for now it doesn't really matter, because, the same way we're gonna address the mild circumstances and the cause of suffering, which isn't uncaused, is actually gonna stop the sort of perpetual pianos falling on your toes, if that's ever happened to any of you, and I'm sure it has. Really what they all come down to is, you know, the only reason we're unhappy in any given moment is we haven't done the things that will cause our happiness. And the only cause for happiness is reaching out to make others happy. So that's mainly what I'm going to talk about, but I wanted to talk about one more sort of obstacle that comes up specifically in reference to our efforts to make people happy, because I think it doesn't always come as naturally as we'd like. And sometimes we sort of hear ourselves like thinking or saying mean things like to or about people. You know, I do. I want to be the nicest guy in the world, but you know, listening to the dialogue in my head, it can be pretty critical, sarcastic, cynical, even mean. And you know, you get really wild perspectives in retreat when you're trying to be quiet. And on one level, it doesn't feel like I've been quiet at all, because with the exception of very brief moments in meditation, very, very brief moments in meditation, the dialogue in my head hasn't really slowed down much, sort of blabbing away like always. And it's rough in there. There's some mean stuff going on, you know, just at me, a lot of self-abuse. In fact, I didn't really know this, I'll tell you, you know, Kendra and I, we don't talk to each other. You know, basically, right? There's sort of this ever-growing repertoire of squeaks and squeals and giggles and onomatopoeia, you know, that sort of start as emotional outburst and develop into, you know, fixed lexical meaning. I said buzz buzz, not zoom zoom, you know. but you know, still, silence is the rule in the house. But as it turns out, when I'm alone, like, I don't know, walking around the house or working on something, I talk to myself, out loud. I didn't know this. Basically all profanity. I mean, no, I mean, it's, oh, it may be at me. It may be at the, you know, inanimate objects in the world around me. Yes, Rob, I still hit my thumb with hammers, you know, no problem. If I'm so hard on myself on the inside that it's actually pouring out my mouth, when I'm alone, how likely am I going to be to sort of bring that abuse to a screeching halt the moment someone else gets in the way? And we got to be nicer to ourselves if we're going to be nicer to other people. You know, I'm hearing all this abuse in my head, and it's, you know, it is ruthless on me, but then on everyone else. And, you know, we have worldviews, so we're supposed to know better than to, you know, blame other people for stuff we don't like, but I slip, a lot. And then my mind will like hear this like blatant, you know, violation of worldview, and the guns sort of swing the other way. And, you know, no, Ben, you know, you're the asshole, man, because they're your projection. And you're supposed to know that that's coming from you. In fact, Ben, you're doubly an asshole because first you did the deeds that force you to see them acting out in a way that you don't like. And now you're blaming them for living up to the vision that you made of them, Ben, you jerk. You know. And it's basically all true. But, you know, I'm not such an asshole because I'm trying, you know, damn it. And I care, you know. I mean, I noticed, like, for once in how many eons, you know, like, we stopped to notice, and it's a miracle. It's hard. We're trying. And, you know, Lord Buddha said, right, the greatest austerity, the greatest spiritual hardship is just not getting angry at people. And the momentum against us is, like, overwhelming. So, you know, just to notice, just to, you know, give a damn for a minute that you'd like not to do that. Well, that's a miracle. I mean, that's awesome. And we slip sometimes, but you know what? It's all right. And, it's something I wasn't hearing enough, right? In the dialogue in my head, you know, like, that's all right, Ben. I mean, it's all right, man. You know, like, yeah, we just lashed out again, you know, and, no, they didn't deserve it. But it's all right, man, you know, and we got to get better at this, and we will, and keep working on it. And you are working on it. And it's good what you're doing, Ben. It's good what you're doing. And what I'm saying is we're actually protecting other people by being kinder to ourselves. And that'll make you happier. Right. And not just like, you know, be nice to yourself. You'll be happy. We got to be nicer to everybody. And I think if the reason you're being kinder to yourself is so that you can be even kinder to other people, it'll make both of you happier, you know, that much sooner. So let's talk about actually causing our happiness. And the only cause for happiness is making people happy. Happiness isn't like waiting under a rock somewhere for us to find it. It's that's why I like the gel pen. You like the felt tip pens, and people like ballpoint. But it's not the pen. You're the source of happiness. Your heart make joy in the world, and then partake of it. Make people happy. Help them. Heal them. Care for them. Laugh with them. Smile at them. It is fun anyway, and it'll make you happy. So. Okay, but what if, you know, like, I want to be happy for other people, but I'm not always in the mood, right? Like, sometimes I'm just not feeling it. I can't just, like, fake it, can I? Yeah, you can fake it, you know? Yeah, you can totally fake it. In fact, if you're really in a rut and you just can't seem to pull out and you're wishing there was something you could do, you know, I guess we better do whatever it takes to make some people happy, you know, even if it means wearing a smile we're not really feeling right now, because it'll help somebody. And otherwise, how are we ever going to get out of that rut, right? Like, without the cause, without the seed that gets planted in your heart when you see yourself make someone happy, you're not going to have any more times when you're feeling it. So, okay, fine. I'm feeling down. I'm feeling bad. I go up to the next person I see, and I smile my sort of half-hearted smile that's not really fooling anyone. I give them a flower. I tell them a joke, and, you know, maybe they smile back, or they, you know, look alarmed at my half-hearted smile, which is, you know, anything but reassuring. Or maybe they smell my flower, or maybe they sneeze, or maybe they laugh at my joke, or maybe they roll their eyes at my joke, or, you know, will that instantly relieve my unhappiness? And we got to talk about it, right? Like, and I'd heard it before over and over, but I read it in this beautiful retreat manual that that the retreatants, the last three retreatants made for us, you know, doing retreat in the future, about how it had really struck them in retreat that you can't do anything about present suffering. You can only fix future suffering. I said I was going to get that out of the way. Anyway, it's not. There's more to go. Okay. So, you know, and it's finally... Oh, right. Scriptural reference, right? Heyam Dukkha Managatam. Master Patanjali, second chapter, Yoga Sutras. Or Yoga Sutra. It's a debate about whether you can pluralize it. you don't care. It's like the kind of stuff we worry about in here. Can I pluralize that? Okay. You know, and it finally, it like strikes you at a certain point. Like that's a relief to know that you can't fix present suffering, because there's so much like effort and stress that goes into trying to fix things right now, and a lot of painful disappointment. Sometimes it even feels like you've found an instant cure, like you'll try something and suddenly feel yourself, you know, like feeling better. You'll get the result you wanted in the next moment, and seeds don't work that way. Mental seeds don't work. No seeds work that way. In fact, whatever happens in that moment, you can be assured that whatever you just did in the moment before wasn't the cause. Right? Aryanagarjuna says, it's a shame when we step on a bug, our own ribs don't break. Because they will. And if we knew that, then we wouldn't make this mistake. We wouldn't step on bugs. It's this time gap that confuses us. And so, right, like if I... you know, if I asked the caretakers for flower seeds, because the area around my house looks like the surface of the moon, and so they do, of course. They send Gloriosa daisy seeds. So, I plant my Gloriosa daisy seeds, and it's just the right depth, and I'm watering them for the first time. And then what if, you know, all of a sudden, immediately, a little green sprout was popping up, like... what could I be relatively assured that little green sprout ain't? Yeah, damned unlikely it's a Gloriosa daisy seed coming up. So in that next moment, after you smile your smile or laugh your laugh or, you know, give your flower, tell your joke, how are you going to feel? Well, I don't know. It depends on the seed you planted before that. So am I saying it doesn't work? No, it's the only thing that works. Make people happy if you want to be happy. But I'll tell you, one time ain't going to do much. We have to make a consistent, focused effort if we want to see results. So, okay, how soon? When do I get to see results? And sorry, I don't know that either. Because it's kind of up to you. How hard do you want to work at it? You know, I recommend if you want to be happy soon... reach out and make people happy a lot. And I'll tell you a reminder that I've learned to use. When you're sad, when you're down, when you're depressed, when you're like in this funk and you just wish you could pull out. You just wish there was something you could do. And you're wondering like what food to eat or website to check, you know, or, you know, which I'm always doing that or, or, you know, like drug to take, even caffeine or Tylenol or sugar or, do this, right? Like reach out to somebody and tell them how beautiful they are, how they inspire you, how great they are. Help them, make a meal for them, play with them. And, I can't tell you what a miracle it is to like finally have an answer from the depths of that despair. Cause we can have a tendency to feel so hopeless And we're not hopeless. You know, the key to happiness is in our hands. And I think I've been particularly blessed in retreat to see that, because I've been particularly blessed in retreat to be with my partner, my angel, my wife, 24/7. And man, retreat especially, depression can strike out of nowhere and hit hard, and there's nowhere to go, nothing much to distract me. I'm just going to sort of do the same things today that I did yesterday, that I did the day before, and it can get incredibly claustrophobic, and you know, even the things that I might want to do to distract myself, maybe like, you know, eat a big meal or read a novel, they're just going to hurt my practice. But I can find some way to give her joy, and it's a miracle. And you know, even if I'm mad at her, which you know is not where problems come from, right? But you know, I do it anyway, and still, it can be like even more powerful to say, you know, screw it. That, you know, I've got one tool in the world for my happiness, and it's her. And I'm gonna make this, you know, desperate cry for help to the universe, right? Like, an act of truth, an act of refuge, right? Because I'm unhappy, and that's the refuge part, right? The because, not even though I'm unhappy, but as a direct and opposite reaction to the unhappiness that I'm feeling, because I demand to accept the truth of where my pain isn't coming from, where my happiness will come from. And I tell her she's so beautiful. And it's a miracle. And I warn you again, this will sometimes seem to work right away. In fact, the more we do it, and the more we know why we're doing it, the more you may suddenly find yourself feeling better in the very next moment. And it's not what you just did. It's the time before that, or the time before that, or the time before that, because you see, the causes are building up. The causes for you to see yourself happy are building up. And so it may start to look instant, like the sound of your wife's laughter will just be the most beautiful sound you could ever hear. And it always makes you feel great. And that's beautiful. And we need that kind of encouragement. But don't be fooled. It's not the joke you just told. It's the one before that. And I think if we don't remember that, we can have a tendency to doubt the method when she doesn't smile back today like she did yesterday, and now I'm not feeling better for my efforts like I did yesterday, and it's like that for a while, because we have to build up the causes, and I think maybe that's karma yoga. Like it's this big deal in the Bhagavad Gita, and there are a lot of very confusing explanations of it, and I was confused. Like Lord Krishna says, "Oh Arjuna, let not the fruit of your action be the motive for your action." Right? Like, don't do stuff for the result. And I'm thinking, wow, okay. Well, why then? Why do stuff? You know, like I don't think I really believe anyone ever did anything, didn't want a result, you know? But you see, we think the thing that happens right after our action is the result of the action, and it ain't. The thing that happens right after our action is the result of a whole lot of sort of accidentally planted seeds. And we're not in a position to know what's going to happen next until we spend a focused period planting seeds intentionally. And then you have a pretty good idea what's going to happen next. Oh, even so, you'll have a few surprises popping up for a while you finish off all the old seeds from before you knew about seeds. So I think maybe when Lord Krishna is saying don't do it for the result, he's saying don't do it for the thing you thought was the result that ain't the result at all. Don't do it for the thing that's going to happen right after you tell your joke or smile your smile or give your flower or make someone a meal. Because right now, I'm not in a position to know what's going to happen next. So, am I doing it for the result? Come on. You know. But, yeah, of course. But I'm slowly learning that the result is coming later. And there's not that much I can do about now, right now. Still, if we don't get cracking on later now, we're in for more of the same sort of karmic roulette. I say start stacking the deck now. It's a mixed metaphor, I know. It's such a relief because now we don't have to kill ourselves trying to fix all the wild stuff that's happening in the moment. It's all pre-recorded. It's not a live studio audience laughing at your jokes. Whether the audience laughs or cries got decided last week, and you can't rewrite this week's episode, so you don't have to try. But you can sit back and watch this week's episode and learn from this week's episode and find out how you're going to write next week's episode. For example, if you're not seeing as much happiness in this episode as you'd like to see in next week's episode, reach out in the world and make some joy. And I wanted to say, you know, I know on this side of the curtain, wherever the curtain is, you spend a lot of time alone, and I know you know a lot of practices to plant this happiness seed, sort of Tonglen practices, visualizing, giving happiness to other people, and another way that I think is very powerful is to think of someone who you're going to see and some sweet deed you can do to make them happy when you see them next and write it down and put it in some sweet sacred place and do it when you see them next. And I think that's a very, very powerful way to plant that happiness seed. But, you know, please, if you have anyone near you at all, even an email away, a phone call away, whatever, reach out to them now. Make someone happy now, you know, help them, heal them, play with them. But do it now. And there's another extreme that I can have a tendency to fall into where something will go wrong or someone will say something I don't like or I'm down. And I think I have a practice. I meditate every day and I say my prayers and I do yoga and there are just some sort of nice things that I generally do for people and I'm going to let this go. And, the sort of general good seeds I'm planting in my life, they'll work this out. And that's not wrong per se, but I think it's slower than it has to be. Geshe Michael taught us the cruise missile thing, right? Right? In Tibet, they called this the cruise missile thing. right? So you take your good deeds, you make your good deeds, and you sort of like aim them at the thing you want to fix. And one of the more powerful ways that I've found to aim my good deeds, to sort of mentally connect the goodness I'm trying to make with the thing that I want to change is to act immediately. Like while I'm still thinking about, while I'm still upset by whomever or whatever has gone wrong for me, make someone happy, help them, heal them, hug them, give to them, laugh with them. And it doesn't have to be the person who just pissed you off. That's a damn powerful way to do it, but it can be anybody. But do it now. You know, fix your problems now. You never have to wait. And it's such a miracle because now we finally have a place to sort of put that energy, put that effort. You don't have to just ride out the pain. And you may have to feel unhappiness for a little while longer, but you're not just sort of waiting for it to pass. We can be active. We can act. We can do. We can give, help, heal, love, joke, play, fake it if you have to. It doesn't really matter. Happiness is in your hands now. make it for yourself consciously and immediately right now in the people around you. And your life will quickly be filled with joy. And so last thing. Oh, man, the caretakers. It's, you know, they, you gave your lives to us. And it's overwhelming. I mean, the effort, the belief that we feel from you is intense. I mean, it's sort of that's the gate on the lock on the gate, right? Keeping us all in here at work. You know, I'll be honest, I didn't know how well it was going to go. Sort of, you know, all us retreatants and, you know, so few of you. And you blew away my wildest expectations. And I knew you were special, but, oh, I mean, the way I see you now, I mean, I'm in awe of your, you know, your endless, tireless dedication and belief and energy and an amazing thing happens when you have friends like that. You see, you know, as I said, I feel this, you know, faith from you. We feel your faith, your belief. And though I can have self-doubt, often crushing self-doubt, then, you know, then delivery day rolls around and in comes this package of like, of joy and love and effort and belief and anything and everything I ask for always and immediately. And it's a real challenge to that self-doubt. Because you see, your deeds are so like decisive, like unmistakable. And I can't help but have faith in you. And so if I believe in you and you believe in me, then, you know, don't I have to believe you about me a little bit, right? And it's a very profound gift that you give me. And I think this is the power of great friends and great teachers. You know, Lady Ruth was just here in the last break, and she gave us this beautiful teaching about Maitri and Bala. Friendship and power, she said. Maitri Adishu Balani, third chapter Yoga Sutras, which she translated as from friendship comes power. And man, I think that is so cool. I mean, really, really deep. In fact, she said in her book, I thought it was really cool, she interpreted Lord Buddha as saying, when I return to this world in the future, my name will be Maitreya. It's that same word again, Maitri, friendship, which I sort of wanted to further imagine meant, you know, maybe he was saying he would come back as our friend or our friends who are also our teachers, right? Our spiritual friends, right? Kalyana Mitra in Sanskrit, Geshe in Tibetan, Gewe Shenyin. So, I was walking the streets of Sera Monastery in India with one of my very closest friends and very deepest teachers. And we had heard that Master Shantideva's reincarnation was staying over in a little shack behind the debate ground at Sera Jay, of all places. And so, you know, I'm like, wow, you want to go meet him? And he's like, yeah, you know, I whatever. I don't know, man. He's like, you know, I just don't see why, he says. Like, these divine beings who could reach me anywhere, right? Who, if they really wanted to help me, they could appear anywhere in my life. Why would they be, you know, on the other side of the world, you know? And it, you know, it's Sera Jay of all places. He didn't say that. It sort of seems to me that they would be all around me. They would be in the people closest to me if they wanted to reach me. And he often reminded me of of a teaching Geshe-la gave us about His Holiness the First Panchen Lama, who was asked, "What was the greatest thing you ever did in your life?" And oh, what a life! I mean, he lived to be 92 in medieval society when like 30 was pretty good, he had some of the most amazing teachers and some of the most amazing students, and wrote some of the most profound books, heartrending spiritual poetry and crystal clear instructional texts. And the guy stopped wars by walking unarmed into the middle of battlefields. And he said, the greatest thing I ever did in my life, I think it was this prayer festival that this annual prayer festival I started in my hometown, this big party. Because the goodness of rejoicing in the Dharma is without measure. And this friend of mine, this teacher of mine, who didn't need to go to some shack in the back of the debate ground to meet with the divine, who were all around him all the time, he taught me, I think this means, he said, I think this means that just to rejoice in the presence of a divine being is the same. Just to be happy in the presence of a divine being is a goodness without measure. And you see who he meant, right? He meant you, and he meant me. He meant us, and the people all around you, walking alongside you, and helping you, and inspiring you to constantly redefine yourself by their vision of you, to make you want to be better, to be worthy of all the love that they give you, to be like them, and they're so precious. And when you get this glimpse of who they could be, right? Who they must be if divine beings wanted to reach us, then just to be happy, just to rejoice in their presence, to study, to talk, to laugh, to play, to sing, to be happy, to just to laugh in the presence of these divine beings is a goodness without measure. And I miss you so much. It is by far the hard part, the hardest part about me being here. And I can't wait to come out and share this, this goodness with you again, this joy with you again. So, enjoy each other, and enjoy this time together. It's so precious. And laugh at all the Lama's jokes in class, and laugh with each other, and play and serve each other, and sing, and it's a goodness without measure. And then wherever you go or stay on Monday, or whenever this time ends for you, take that joy with you to where the divine beings would also be if they wanted to reach you, and the divine wives and husbands and mothers and fathers and brothers and sisters and friends, and enjoy them, and take them to dinner and go to movies and throw them parties, and it's a goodness without measure. And maybe have a little party waiting for us. We'll have so much to be happy about, and so much to laugh about.
All right, beam me out of here, Scotty.